So where do we start?
Okay, let's see.
Where are you from?
From Dallas, technically Arlington, Texas, but grew up in Dallas.
And tell me about your family.
It's my mom and my dad, and then I have two sisters, and one brother. One sister and one brother on my dad's side. And then there's me.
You're the youngest?
I'm the youngest, yes.
You had mom and dad the whole time?
Yes. Yeah, they're still together.
Tell me about your childhood. How would you describe it?
It was chaotic. My father, we grew up in a very religious household, and the things that had happened growing up that I thought were normal and I thought a lot of families went through were not normal. Example being, we had this stick called the Rod of Correction, and it had Bible verses on it and our names on it. And anytime, we'd get in trouble, like we would get beat with the Rod of Correction because, that was from the Bible and
The rod of
the Rod of
correction.
Correction.
Whose idea was that?
My
Your
father's.
father?
Yes. And yeah, he would make us, we used to get deliverances on us. So that's like what we'd call them, deliverances. They were people who would come over to the house, just like people from the church or just people they would meet. And we would like do an exorcism on them. And we would have to be in the room and watch just so many crazy things transpire. And then we would get the deliverances on us. And they would include us getting like beat with the Bible. And so to the point where my sisters and I, we would have bruises on our bodies from, him like turning the Bible into our chest and, hitting us with the Bible. And no one else could like be in charge of those deliverances. Like he was the only one who had the power to exorcise those demons.
Well, your dad probably got this from his family.
Yes, most likely. He grew up in a religious family as well. But when he went into the music industry, he like renounced or denounced everything kind of related to God. And then,
What did your father do for work?
so he was in a R&B group called Color Me Bad. So the song I Wanna Sex You Up is my father. And so yeah, he was in that group for a while, like just very prominent in R&B and Grammys and things like that. And then he had apparently met my mother when she was 13. They're 7 years apart, and I didn't really do the math on that until I kind of thought about it a little more. But yes, they had met when when she was 13. There's a picture of them when she was 15, 16, still on their Facebook. And she had my sister, Destiny, when she was 19. And he had come back at that time when he had my sister and to California. That's where my mom was living. And changed his life around, said he was done with the music industry. Said, he's changing his life around, like begged for God to come into his life and, said that that is what happened. That's the story, you know, I was told. And he decided, like, to marry my mom and do the right thing and, you know, be in this family and make it work and stuff. And, you know, said he's in love with her. And, yeah, so then growing up, my dad had other kids from different women. So that's my brother and my other sister. And when all that happened, they got custody and of all the kids, and we all grew up together. I love my siblings very much. They are my rock, and they're my everything. But they went through some crazy things as well. My brother, because my sister and my brother were on my dad's side, my mom definitely treated them subhuman. She would keep my brother in a room, like in his room, and lock him in his room for days, to the point where he would, like, go to the, you know, shit himself in the corner of the room, because that's, he didn't have anything. He didn't have like a bucket or anything. He just stayed there.
No food?
Mm-mm. Not that I can recall. He would just be there. And then she let him out. And yeah. And then my sister Brianna, she would treat her like a slave, quite literally. She had made her run to school, and then drove beside her and would like scream at her and yell at her the whole way to school, you know. And they got to a point where they took her everything, quite literally. So just imagine, you go into the room, there's no door, mattress only, no sheets. They cut her hair. They gave her one outfit to wear for church, one outfit to wear for the whole week for school. Took her makeup, took her face wash, took her hair products, took everything. And the only time she could get that stuff back was for church, so that the church didn't know what was going on. And they would let us know and sit us down and be like, you can't talk about, you know, what's happening. You know, like, we have to, you know, because my dad was the preacher there. He was in charge of the music. Like, he's the music worship, like, pastor. But he also preached every once in a while. They would when we were younger, we would ask him to watch like movies with us and like just spend like quality time together. And he would take us to the computer room, because at that time, you know, you have to like boot up the computer and it takes a long time to boot up and stuff like that. So we had it in like a room. So we went to the computer room. And instead of watching movies, we would watch videos. It was this one website where he described the one unforgivable sin as cursing God. He said that was the one unforgivable sin. So we used to go on a website, and with him, we would sit and watch these people cursing God for, it was just a like a stream of people doing these things. And we just, you know, that's what we would watch. We would just sit there and watch it. And until the point where like the speakers started like screaming at us, it just would make this like horrendous sound. And that was when it would be over.
Last year, the Palisades fire tore through Los Angeles. Most people saw that story.
What fewer people saw is that 2026 is shaping up to be the worst wildfire year on record globally. The total area burned worldwide is already more than 20% higher than any year since 2012. That story is out there. It's just being told differently depending on where you look. Left-leaning outlets are focused on the U.S. response, what the government is doing, and who's affected locally. Right-leaning outlets are covering the global scale, the scope, the numbers, what's happening in other countries. It's the same crisis, but with two completely different lenses. Neither version is lying, but if you're only reading sources on one side, you're only getting half the picture. That's something I think a lot about doing what I do. The people I sit down with, their stories get filtered the same way, shaped by who's telling it and who they're telling it to. That's why I use Ground News. It's an app that shows you how any story is being covered across the political spectrum, side by side. You can see each outlet's bias, how reliable they are, and who owns them. You can actually compare instead of just getting handed one version of the news. Check it out at ground.news/SWU. You'll get 40% off their Vantage plan. And by subscribing or gifting it, you're directly supporting this channel too. That's ground.news/SWU. Now back to the video.
My sister and I were very prominent in our church, in the youth group. There was a program for some reason where the children of the youth group, children, could write letters to inmates in prison, unsolicited. They're not reading the letters, they're just sending them to make these prisoners, I don't know, come to God, I guess. And my sister wrote to one prisoner, and he got out and came to the church and walked up to her and was like, do you remember me? And you know, she's 14 and she's like, no, I don't know. But she's thinking it's someone from the church. So she's trying to be nice because we were taught, you know, to always be respectful of the church elders, always be, you know, always look good because of my father. Always. And she was scared when he said, my name's James. I'm the one you've been writing letters to. Because she thought he was far away, you know, in prison. And now he's here at the church. Well, my father befriended him. And not long after, he started raping my sister. And got her name tatted across his chest. My dad knows about that. He'll deny it to this day. To this day, he'll deny that. But he knew. He knew about that. And the videos. And they were best buds.
When you say the videos, what do you mean the videos?
The videos of my sister. Child porn. Mm. And
how old was she?
When it happened? 14.
14.
I remember James. I didn't know this was happening. Sorry. He always said that Destiny was mature for her age, my father. And Destiny's fast. You know, she's, you know, a slut. Then we would, he hosted a men's group at our house where I would stay you know, and the kids would be and stuff. Come to find out that he, all of these men he had to the house were pedophiles. And they'd have Bible study, and he would try to deliver them. And he did that behind the back of the director of the church. So when the director found out, she was so enraged, and she just couldn't believe it. she couldn't believe it. That they can't even be in the radius of children. Like, they can't even be in proximity to children. And you have these kids, you have these pedophiles in your home with your kids. So yeah, that was crazy. And for a while, I never understood why he didn't protect us and why things kept happening to us. You know, because when I was 15, that's when I got in a relationship with somebody who was 20. And I came to him and I told him, like, hey, this is, you know, somebody like I want to be with and all this stuff. And he was like, you're mature for your age. You're mature for your age. So, you know, you like, I'll allow it. You know, you're very intelligent and you're very mature. So you'll be fine. And shortly after that, you know, of course, no 20-year-old actually is in love or wants a real relationship with a 15-year-old. So that really messed up my view of love and intimacy. And, you know, my sister, on my dad's side, when she was 16, she ended up running away by that point. She ran away, and she had written me a note. Me and my sister, we were very, very close at that time. She was my rock when all the beatings would happen. And when I tell you those beatings, like, they loved those beatings. Like, if you didn't cry and beg, they would just keep going until you did. And it was like a gleam in their eye. They loved the beatings. Sorry. There's just so much I'm trying to think.
Was your mom? Tell me about your mom.
My mom, she was like his right-hand man with the beatings. Like, she actually would orchestrate the beatings. I think she enjoyed them more than he did. Multiple times, CPS got called on us from school and from, you know, my sister having bruises and, you know, telling people what would happen. And, you know, with me, like, I would get, in elementary school, I would get molested on the school bus, and I would try to tell people and tell my parents, like, what would happen. And they're like, no, you just don't understand. You don't know what that is. You're too young. Like, you don't know. And it would be my mom who would really, like, do his bidding. So my dad is very much an authoritarian, and she was definitely his right-hand man, you know. But she despises him, and that's the crazier part. She she cheats on him. And that's one thing people don't know. They love to stand at this forefront of a union, but she would use us to cheat on him. She would take me to the park to meet people. She would have my sister clean the whole house so she could have her suitors come over and tell us to go to Six Flags for the day. And there was one time where I actually walked in on her cheating, and I didn't know that she had been cheating this whole time. Everyone tried to kind of hide me from the horrors growing up, so for the most part of my childhood, I just disassociated. I didn't really understand what was going on. It didn't make sense to me. So I would just read, and I would just go somewhere else while everything was happening, all the screaming and the crying and the deliverances. And she had walked in, and it was one of the guys from the men's group, funny enough.
One of the men from?
My dad's men group.
Oh, the pedophile group.
Yeah. And she blamed me for walking in on it. That was the first time I had a breakdown. Like a fetal position, crying. My dad and I went to a motel that night, and he sat me down and was like, would you be upset if I divorced your mom? You know, would that, you know, I told her, I said I would only stay until you were 18, but I was almost 18 at that time. He's like, this is not the first time she's done it. It's been multiple times. She would cheat, I'm gonna tell you, everybody. Like, it was crazy. It was like her best friend's son she cheated with. It was crazy. And we had to keep that secret. We couldn't tell anybody because he wanted my mom to, he wanted to protect my mom, I guess. One thing about my dad is he's a coward. He is a coward. There's absolutely no excuse for the things that he's done to us.
Were all the kids subject to this?
We didn't know how bad it was for each individual child, though. Because it was operated in secrecy. We'd have I'd have my stuff going on, and then he'd whisper in my ear, "Destiny's a slut. Destiny's easy. Destiny, you know, she's all these things." So I'm looking at Destiny not knowing she's getting raped. I'm just thinking she's disgusting. My sister, my mom's telling me, my other sister, you know, Brianna is just doing terrible at school and she deserves this. And she, you know, and whole time, she's getting bullied at school. She has one outfit to wear every single day and nothing else. That was it. And even when she ran away, they took all her money. All she could do was go to school, go to church, and work. And when she left the house and ran away, she had this money in a savings account so that she could find, you know, something to do. She didn't have a plan. She just knew she had to get out, which honestly, props to her, because she knew how bad it was. And she didn't want to leave us behind, so she wrote us a note. She wrote me a letter. And they hid it from me and told me and lied to me, told me that she never left anything behind until I found the letter in my mom's closet. And just the whole time there, she left us because she doesn't love us. She left us because she hates us. She hates you. That's why she left, you know. And so I was just so heartbroken, and I couldn't understand why she left. They took all her money, drained her account. She was left with nothing. She had to figure it out. And when I tell you, my sister, Brianna, she is genuinely one of the strongest people I know. She has gone through so much because of my parents. Things I probably don't even know myself. All I can do is just pray that, you know, she realizes now that this is not okay. And she got most of the beatings. It was every day. It got to the point where I just put on headphones so I can just escape and not have to hear that for the night.
What age did this sexual stuff start for you?
So it was when I was 15, but when I would get molested on the bus, it was honestly as early as I can remember. I was in third grade or second grade, second and third grade. It would happen throughout my period of time there. And I told the bus driver. And the bus driver told my parents, and that's when they didn't do anything about it, so it kept happening. And I just started being quiet about it and just let it happen.
And this is with who?
All the kids on the bus. I don't understand that either. I don't understand why kids would do that. But they would just force me in the corner and just, like, touch me and kiss me and... You know, I didn't understand it. I didn't understand what was going on. You know, I was so young. I just didn't understand it. But I knew it was wrong, so I told my parents about it. And, yeah, and they didn't do anything about it. Understandably so, you know, now understanding my father's relationship with pedophiles, my father's relationship with my mother, you know, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck.
In your email, you mentioned that your mom used to have you strip naked. And
yes. So that was something I actually just found out. I told you I disassociated a lot as a kid. My sister Destiny, we hadn't talked for a long time. They operated on us all being divided so that they could continue the narrative that they wanted and the just continue doing what they were doing. So me and her just recently reconnected, and she had told me, "Do you remember when you were six? What happened?" And I was like, "I don't remember." I was like, "I don't know what you're talking about." She said that when I was six, my mom and my dad, you know, Brian is one of the Color Me Bad members. He was staying with us for a short period of time in the house. And, you know, Brian never did anything. You know, he was just there. But for some reason, they had me go into his room naked, and they had me strip and walk into his room, and just were laughing like it was funny, I guess. And my sister had wanted to protect me from that. She didn't know if I remembered it or not, but she was about 10 at the time. And she was so angry, and she was so confused. And to this day, we're still so confused. I don't understand.
It's almost like your parents were offering you up to him.
Yeah.
At 6 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
And your parents never got caught with any pedophile charges or anything like that?
No. They were so good at... they're so good at making people believe that they are God's, like, chosen people. And it was so suffocating because we all were so angry. My sister, one of the signs of sexual abuse is wetting the bed, and she'd wet the bed so much when I was younger, and they used to come to me and laugh at her, make fun of her, beat her if she wet the bed more. And I didn't know that was a sign of sexual abuse. I didn't understand what was going on. My mom's way of, like, playing with us, which I just kind of came to terms with quite literally yesterday as I was thinking, is I don't understand it, but she would, you know, we're children, so we're not as big as her as an adult. And she would pin us to the ground, get on top of us and pin us to the ground. And she would, like, spit in our mouth and spit in our face. And we couldn't move our face. Like, she would pin us, and then she would force us, like, and she wouldn't get up. And it was so crazy because, like, I don't understand that. I just don't understand why, like, they did some of the things they did. Like, it just makes no sense. Like, why? We never got, you know, like, fun things and, like, movies and things like that. We got, you know, watching Bob Larson and God, people screaming, fuck God, over and over and over. And deliverances, beating us with the Bible. And when my sister, on my dad's side, when she got abused by her baby's father, my dad blamed her and said that it's her fault because she chooses bad men, and she did this to herself, was his exact words. Didn't help her, didn't come to see her. Just blamed her. She was pregnant when it happened.
What age was she when she had her first child?
She was, I think, 22. When I came to my parents about my boyfriend in high school who had forced himself on me at a party because he was mad at me, they told me that that's still my husband and that's who God wanted me to be with, and that's, you know, my dad heard it from God, you know, that's who. And one thing about my dad is he journals. He journals so much talking to God. And if you could hear, like, the things God says, it's wild. It really is wild. It's everything he thinks, obviously. He's God. And when he would make us journal, we used to have to journal 2 hours every day. We'd have to read the Bible and journal for 2 hours every day. And he'd set an alarm, and we'd have to sit at the kitchen table, and we'd have to do that. He would literally go through our Bibles and make sure it looks worn, like as if we were turning pages or we'd get in trouble. We would have to, you know, like journal, write to God, and then we'd have to tell him what God told us, you know. And if it wasn't aligned with what he thought God was saying, which was obviously him, we'd have to basically revisit our conversation with God. So sometimes it'd be longer than 2 hours if it wasn't up to his standard and things like that. My brother got kicked out when he was 12. So he had to go live with family out in Oklahoma. That's where he's from, my dad. To this day, I don't know where my brother is. I really, really, really pray that he's okay. Because he went through a lot. And he was a really good kid. Speaking of offering me up, at some point, when I was a little older, about 17, my parents would fly out to California to go to Sunday service and mentor, you know, a celebrity out there, a certain person. And they would constantly go. So I'd be left at the house by myself, which I loved, you know. So they would leave all the time, go to Sunday service, spend time with that person. And when they would, they came back one day. And mind you, they told me everything, for the most part, that would transpire with this person.
Do you want to mention who it was?
Kanye. And
Kanye and Kim?
Just Kanye.
Just Kanye.
Yeah, just Kanye. And one time they came home and they told me, after everything that they had told me about the music industry and about, you know, things that would transpire, they would tell me, we can get you studio time. We can, you know, we can make you famous. If that's what you want, Michaela, we can make you famous. Do you want that? It's your choice. And one thing about my mom is she, like I said, she would do the bidding. So she's coming up to me, hey, it's your choice, Michaela, but, you know, we could, you know, because I am a singer. I had lost my love for singing after I left their house because of just kind of what it reminded me of. But I am a singer. And they would tell me, we could make you famous. And I remember my spirit being so disturbed because I couldn't understand. You just told me all of these things that would happen, all of these things that happened. And you wanna offer me up for fame? I don't understand that. But thank God that I have some discernment, because my spirit was so bothered by that I said no. I said, I don't want to go. And they're like, are you sure? And I was like, I'm not doing this. This is not, I don't feel comfortable. And they let it go after that. But to this day, I can't process a parent putting their 17-year-old in a position to potentially, God knows. They used to pray when I got, kind of came out of puberty, and I feel like I was an ugly duckling before, in my opinion. I had glasses and braces and, you know, I like to read. And when I turned 15, that's when everything started changing. And I started looking different, and people started looking my way. And come to find out that my whole life, probably still to this day, they pray for me to get in such a bad car accident that they prayed for me to become paralyzed. They've prayed for me to become so dismembered and so disfigured in my face so that God could humble me.
Your parents would do this?
They prayed on it. They still do, probably. They think that I'm in rebellion of God when I cut them off. I had cut them off when I left the house. And of course, it's rebellion of my father. So, but they assume that's God. So they would pray and they would tell my sister, Destiny, that, you know, God's going to humble her. God's going to, you know, she's going to get in an accident and it's going to ruin her face. And she's going to finally be humble before God. And she's going to humble herself before God. That's how my dad talks. I did get in an accident. Nothing happened. Nothing happened to me. I'm very protected. And I'm not afraid of my father. When I did get in my accident, I came to them because I didn't know they were praying on me to get an accident. I didn't know that at the time. But I came to them because there's just a point in time where you just want your parents. And I could have died. The paramedics, when they came, I was on the side of the road. I was on a major highway in Dallas, and I slid off the highway. And the only thing that stopped my car from flipping was a sewer drain. And I flew off the highway, and I should have flipped because it was a downward slope. But I hit the sewer drain, and I just slid to, you know, a mile or so away. And when the paramedics came, they couldn't believe I was alive, in the car. They're like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah." They're like, "Can you get out?" I was like, "Yeah." I had not even a scratch on me. No scratch. And I came to them. And I just wanted to be held. We don't hug my family. We don't hug. We don't, you know, we're not affectionate. We don't, you know, we don't do that. I just wanted to be held. And my parents sat there and told me that God's trying to get my attention. And then that, you know, I deserved it. And they literally said I deserved it. And at that time, my car was, you know, it was fucked. I didn't have any money to get a new car. So I was trying to sell things on Facebook to pay to put a down payment on a car so I can have a car. When I met up with somebody to sell one of my laptops, they pulled a gun and they took everything. All my money, you know, my laptop, everything. And I had a breakdown and I called my sister. And I told her what happened. And she was like, "Michaela, make a GoFundMe. My friends want to send you money." And I was like, "I don't like asking for handouts." I was like, "I don't want to do that." My dad made money that evil. It's the root of all evil. So it was no, nobody can have money, pretty much. So I was like, no. I don't want attention. I don't want any of that. And she's like, please, Mikhail, they heard what happened. Like, she was with friends and she told them what happened. So I made the GoFundMe. People sent over $3,000. And my parents told people, mind you, my parents never sent me a dime. They never did anything for that. And come to find out, they had been telling people that I got in this car accident and am making this GoFundMe for attention and for pity, so that people would pity me. And they stand by that. To this day, they stand by that, that I did it for pity, for attention. My relationship with my parents is so weird, because all you want to do is love your parents. And all we ever have done is love our parents. We thought the world was against us, because that's what they would tell us. It's the world. The world is against us. It was a cult. My dad was the head. We were his disciples. We worshiped our father. We'd watch videos and videos and videos of him and the band and just look at him. You know, we idolized him. And as I got older and I started having a mind for myself and I started telling people just little things like, have you, like, y'all used to have this happen to you, right? And people would just like jaw drop, like, that's not normal. That's not what people do in families. It was constant, constant chaos. So I learned how to live in the chaos. My dad operated on fear to keep us silent, because his name, who he is, his appearance, everything is optics, everything. But there's people out there who will tell you their stories of who he is. I want absolutely nothing to do with my parents, because watching my nieces and my nephews grow up, I look at them and I can't imagine doing this stuff that we had to go through. Constantly CPS coming, them training us, you know. Do we hurt you? Do we hurt you? You know, we don't hurt you. That's just what everyone does. This is what everybody does in a family. This is just, it's just spankings. And do you want to get taken away? Do you want them to take you away? It'll be your fault if they take you away, if you say anything. And it's Destiny's fault because she told somebody, and it's her fault. She hates the family. She hates us. Do you hate us? Do you hate the family? You know, and I don't want to be away from my family. I love my family. So I'd lie and disassociate. And to this day, my sister can't stand to even look at a Bible because of the bruises she would have on her and the beatings she would endure. We were never safe. We were that family that everyone thought was just so wonderful, because we were happy kids. At least we wanted to be. we knew how to put on, you know, our faces, our church faces. My sister included, my sister, not knowing the extent of the things she had gone through, broke me. Not knowing that my father knew this whole time. All of the manipulation, all of the lies. All of the years wasted trying to protect a monster. Thank you. I just want the world to know who he is. And that the shame that we have carried our whole lives are not ours to hold. It's his. It's theirs. I'm freeing myself and my sisters and my brother from this. We've had to navigate a world so unlike what other people have had to experience. It's unfair. But I'm not afraid of my father. Not anymore.
Where are your parents now?
They're in Dallas.
They're still married?
To this day. They made their bed. And by me coming here today, I want to free my sisters and my brother from their control. And I want them to understand that what we had to go through, it's not okay. And we don't have to keep hurting anymore. And we don't have to keep a secret anymore. We don't have to hold it. We don't have to hold it any longer. My sister doesn't know I'm here today. My sister on my dad's side, she doesn't know I'm here. My other sister does. One thing my dad would always say is, the truth will always come to the light. Well, today's that day.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
It takes a lot of courage to do what you're doing.
Thank you.